dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business. SwissAmerica.com brings you the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We're guiding you through a very interesting set of insights into the war of ideas today. Starting off with Douglas J. Fife, a former senior Pentagon official in the Bush administration, reflecting on President Obama's speech and strategy towards Iraq. We'll also be talking with him about the peace process, the START treaty, and much more. A fascinating conversation with a very, very thoughtful guy. Secondly, we will be talking with our friend Mark Krikorian from the Center for Immigration Studies, one of the country's leading experts on immigration policy, border security, and the like. Where are we on the border security? We'll be talking with Mark about the Band-Aid that the administration has conjured up for what seems to be pretty clearly political reasons, and the growing threat, not simply of illegal immigrants coming across our borders in droves for economic reasons. That number actually seems to be declining by some estimates rather dramatically because of hard economic times here, but rather the danger that we're going to see people using the porous border to bring various kinds of threats, drugs, weapons, perhaps, maybe even weapons of mass destruction in the hands of terrorists. All of that with Mark Krikorian in segment three. Finally, segment four, our duty Washington national security hand, Sarah Carter, will be joining us, as she does each week at this time, to give us her sense of how the president's speech is playing with the troops, what their takeaway is in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and we'll be drilling down a little bit on the challenges that we're particularly facing in Afghanistan in the days ahead as parliamentary elections loom there. So all of that in an action-packed segment of Secure Freedom Radio. But first, some thoughts from me about this anniversary of sorts of a famous comment by Theodore Roosevelt, certainly one of our most colorful presidents, at the time our youngest. And in 1901, he was then vice president of the United States, he made a famous remark at a state fair out in the Midwest in which he called to mind an adage of the time, I guess, walked softly and carry a big stick. A turn of phrase that conjured to mind the image of a then rising power in the United States, not one to bully, but one to have, especially once Teddy Roosevelt became president and began a major shipbuilding program that gave rise to what came to be known as the Great White Fleet, which he subsequently sent around the world as a display of American strength. All of this was sort of an agenda that served this country well, not being boastful, prideful, aggressive, but nonetheless being formidable. And as he put it at the time, this would give rise to a capacity to defend our hemisphere against the intrusions from outside, best known and identified as the Monroe Doctrine, the desire of the United States to keep such non-hemispheric powers from this continent, a policy, a doctrine that we simply no longer observe, witness the Chinese, the Russians, the Iranians, Hezbollah, Hamas, and others now very much at work inside our hemisphere. But the notion that Teddy Roosevelt sort of espoused in that famous phrase, I think is very much of a piece with the philosophy that we espouse at the Center for Security Policy, and that Ronald Reagan described as peace through strength. And whether it's a big stick or whether it's strength in a more generalized way, the notion that the world is a safer place when American power is formidable is, I think, so time-tested, so certain, based on historical experience, that it is unimaginable to me that we are once again going to see this country doing as it has done time and time and time in the past, which is to cut down that stick or simply throw it away, to dissipate our strength deliberately, as often as not, in favor of, as we heard in the president's remarks earlier this week, diverting to job one, our domestic priorities. And I have to say, there is very much in the tradition of America and in the minds and hearts of so many of us a profound desire to lay down the burdens of our global responsibilities and certainly our global interests, to come home America, as George McGovern once famously put it, to, well, revert to an isolationist kind of stance. Not necessarily no stick, but certainly a lot less of it, sometimes accompanied by more boisterous spoken policies and pronouncements, not the speak softly stuff, but oftentimes just essentially giving up on the world, saying if we're going to leave them alone, they'll leave us alone. History is replete with evidence that this is wrong. Sadly, it has cost us dearly, and the world at large even more profoundly, requiring American aid and assistance and military capabilities and the loss of life to reverse the departure from the strategy of peace through strength, to reverse the practice that often supplants carrying a big stick and speaking softly. I fear that in this election cycle, if we do not ensure that the American people are equipped with the information they need to understand the stakes, we may find coming out of it an unholy alliance between left and right, playing to this sort of default setting in our culture, coming home America, isolationism, call it what you will. It sets the predicate for the next horrific conflict if we yield to that temptation. We mustn't do it. We refuse to here at Secure Freedom Radio. I hope as you listen to us that you too will be impelled to act. Brought the Peace Through Strength platform, for one thing, if you will, peacethroughstrength.com, and let us know what you think. Securefreedomradio.com is one way to do it. Next up, Douglas Fife on his takeaway on President Obama and Iraq. Fascinating stuff. Straight ahead.
Do you want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Pat Boone here with a newsflash. Finally, there's something conservatives and liberals can agree on. Gold. For thousands of years, gold has united mankind regardless of race, religion, or politics. Gold conserves wealth from financial uncertainty, a higher cost of living, and higher taxes. Yet gold also offers liberal benefits, such as growing fourfold since 2001. In fact, gold transcends left-right politics because its value is based upon ultimate economic truth and substance. So, whether you're a conservative, liberal, or independent, gold should be a part of your portfolio and family legacy. Call Swiss America now and request their free 2010 DVD, CD, and Economic Realities Report.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513. 888-393-7513.
Imagine you are a small child living a constant nightmare of abuse and neglect. Late one night, you are rescued from this awful situation and whisked off to a shelter. It happens so fast you have no time to take anything with you. No stuffed animal, no special blanket, not even a clean change of clothes. Scared and with people you don't even know, you have nothing to cling to for comfort. Sadly, each year in America, over 300,000 children endure this trauma and are placed in foster care with empty hands and empty hearts. That's where we come in. With your help, My Stuff Bags Foundation can give these kids their very own My Stuff Duffels, filled with new toys, a stuffed animal, and other desperately needed items. Let's show thousands of children across America that people do care about them, with new belongings and new hope. Please call 8663-MY-STUFF or visit mystuffbags.org. That's 8663-MY-STUFF or mystuffbags.org. Thank you.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
And you, her boyfriend. You were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No. Not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined for a fascinating segment of Secure Freedom Radio by an old friend and colleague, Douglas Feith, formerly the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, currently a senior fellow and director of the Center for National Security Strategies at the Hudson Institute. Doug is also the author of a best-selling book entitled War and Decision, Inside the Pentagon at the Dawn of the War on Terror. It is, by my lights, the single best and probably the single most authoritative rendering of the immediate aftermath of 9/11 and the decisions, the momentous decisions in which Doug was intimately involved that we've come to know as the early stages and important moments of the so-called war on terror. So, Doug Feith, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
Let's start. I know you've just completed a piece for National Review Online on the president's speech. Give us a sense of what you think he's saying and doing and where it's likely to leave us with respect to the war that you had such an instrumental role in helping inaugurate and get onto its early stages, at least.
Well, I was struck by how the president stressed repeatedly in his Oval Office speech that the United States remained committed in Iraq, and yet he didn't provide any explanation of why the United States has an interest in remaining committed in Iraq. The success of the surge is so substantial that the president obviously cannot deny it, nor does he want to fritter it away. He just couldn't afford politically to fritter away a military victory as significant as what was wrought by General Petraeus with his new strategy in Iraq. And yet the president is clearly uncomfortable talking about what the American interest is. He had a lot of emphasis on how the war has benefited the Iraqis, but he didn't say anything about how it has benefited the United States or why the commitment that he said we're making to remain a strong partner of Iraq in the future serves American interests. Now, I believe it does serve American interests, and I think he has a case to make. And I think he should make it, because if we get into trouble, he's going to need popular support for that policy, and he's not going to get it unless he explains to the American people what's in it for them. And I think that preserving the success that we have in Iraq is a case that can be made. And one final point I'll make on that is it was interesting to note that when the president spoke at Fort Bliss earlier in the day, the same day that he gave the Oval Office speech. When he spoke to the soldiers at Fort Bliss, he got up and he said, as a result of your work, not only does Iraq have a brighter future, but America is more secure. And I said, boy, that's a really terrific admission by the president that this war, which the president had opposed, had made America more secure.
Right.
But it was interesting that in the corresponding paragraph of the speech that he gave from the Oval Office, which was carried all across the nation on all the TV, he dropped the line, America is more secure.
Yeah. It's very troubling, Doug, and I have to say it makes me anxious about the reality of his commitment to maintaining the benefits, the accomplishments of the surge, as you've so rightly said, we need to for our interests, not just those of the Iraqi people. Doug, let me segue quickly because we're going to run out of time before we have any opportunity to talk to you about several things that are important. The president is also engaged, as you know so well, in the latest iteration of the so-called Middle East peace process at the moment. We have the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the so-called President of the so-called Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, in town for this seemingly endless dance. Where do you think we are? I know you've spoken recently about Jabotinsky, one of the founders of the State of Israel. Where are we with respect to our friends in Israel and their survival?
Where are we in the peace talks? I would say that the administration has not shown much understanding of what the Arab-Israeli conflict is really about. And what became clear in recent years is the fundamental questions remain the main questions. The question of whether the Palestinian Arabs have a leadership that is capable of making peace and willing to recognize Israel's legitimacy as a state. And instead, the administration is focused on what it calls the final status issues, as if the conflict is about, specific issues like sharing water or where the borders are. And I think that as long as the administration doesn't understand the fundamental nature of the conflict, they're not going to have much luck in solving it.
Yeah. And how would you characterize the fundamental character of the conflict, Doug?
Well, the Arabs have maintained a principled opposition to the idea of a Jewish state based on nationalistic and religious reasons for about 100 years. And I think that has to be taken seriously. They really have a fundamental objection. And until they get a leadership that has different principles and that basically says, you know, we want to define Palestinian nationalism in a positive way rather than as opposition to Zionism and opposition to Israel, I don't think there's much prospect for diplomatic progress.
Yeah, that's kind of a showstopper, isn't it, at the end of the day? And the concessions that might be made at America's demanding by Israel will conduce to more trouble, probably war, it seems to me, rather than peace. Doug, in the remaining minute or so we have with you, could you just quickly give us your sense of another of the president's initiatives, the so-called New START Treaty? You've written about it. You've been describing it on Capitol Hill to folks who need to be thinking seriously about this treaty. What are some of your thoughts and concerns?
Well, I believe that the proper way to look at the START Treaty is as part of the overall approach by the administration to nuclear weapons and the American nuclear posture. And I don't think the treaty itself is enormously significant by itself, but it is significant as part of an overall approach to nuclear weapons that I think is irresponsible. The main sign of the irresponsibility of the administration's approach is the president's endorsement of this idea of moving the world toward nuclear zero, which is to say the complete abolition of all nuclear weapons by all countries. What the president is talking about is so unrealistic. It would require the resolution of all the major conflicts in the world. It would require a degree of trust that really is just a fantasy. And it's the kind of thing that people can endorse because they're more interested in telling you something about themselves than they are in telling you something about the world.
Yeah, very well said. Doug, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Douglas J. Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy under President Bush and now a senior fellow and director of the Center for National Security Strategies at the Marvelous Hudson Institute. Thanks so much for joining us and come back soon. Next up, we have Mark Krikorian on the border security picture, $600 million on. Straight ahead.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at securefreedomradio.org. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
The following commercial is sponsored by FeedThePig.org, an organization devoted to helping you save money. We will not entice you with messages like
lowest prices in town, dealer approved, certified pre-owned,
no obligation consultation,
nor will we brag about our
huge selection, enormous variety,
one-stop shopping,
everything under one roof,
or promise
prices reduced up to 75%.
A sale like this can't go on forever. Factory liquidation.
Financing options available.
We will offer no contingencies like
see store for details.
Prices and participation may vary.
Legal exclusions apply.
No purchase necessary.
We'll try to convince you that our product will give you
leaner, tighter abs in minutes.
Perfect smile. Porcelain veneers.
Freedom from those painful, embarrassing bunions.
Because we simply want to help you spend smarter and save better. Log on to feedthepig.org. Find the benefits of saving for every stage of life. Brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this. So why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable child care near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's me, your piggy bank. Remember when you were a little kid? All the dimes and quarters in my back. Yeah, that was good times. Good times. Now, lately, I gotta be honest, you've been ignoring me. Money's been slipping through your hands like a greased pig. Get it? Because I'm a... Anyway, I know how it is. Now that you get a real paycheck, it's nice to have stuff. You'll start saving money next year. Well, I hate to tell you, but good saving habits start now. Put just 20 bucks in the bank a month. Make your own coffee at home instead of that latte every morning. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Those changes alone could save you thousands of dollars a year. Come on, I'm your piggy bank. We can be together again, me and you, the special times. Anyway, if you don't want me to cry anymore, feed me. Go to feedthepig.org for more ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a five, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We are joined by Mark Krikorian, the executive director of an indispensable organization in Washington, D.C., the Center for Immigration Studies. He has contributed enormously to, I think, all of our understandings of the national security and other imperatives of immigration policy and border insecurity. He has, among other things, written an important book, How Obama is Transforming America Through Immigration. Mark, it's great to have you back with us at Secure Freedom Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
You have... written and spoken and warned and otherwise cajoled, and now we have $600 million being allocated to enhancing the border security, and we're told clearing the way now for the long-sought comprehensive immigration reform, with National Guard troops being put on the border in Arizona and Predator drones apparently now becoming available for monitoring the border. What say you about the condition of border insecurity as a result of all of this?
Well, I mean, the legislation itself really was more a political gesture than anything else. I mean, it was an attempt to create political cover going into the elections. This administration for the current budget year had originally requested a cut in the Border Patrol, a small cut, a 1% cut, but they had requested a reduction in the number of Border Patrol agents. Only when the Arizona issue exploded into the news did they decide, miraculously change their mind and realize, in fact, what we needed was more Border Patrol agents and National Guard on the border and what have you. It's all just, it's a political stunt. And the idea that this somehow is going to really fix anything, especially the National Guard issue, I mean, they're sending eventually something like 1,200 National Guardsmen, and people imagine they're going to be patrolling the border, but they're really not. They're just going to be doing support work for the Border Patrol, driving trucks, doing surveillance, that kind of thing. And that's not bad, but it's not what people imagine. But, you know, the idea that that's somehow going to solve our problem and protect us against not just the potential of jihadist penetration across the southern border, but the overflow of the incredibly brutal and violent low-level civil war that's going on in Mexico. It's just not going to fix anything.
Yeah. We're talking with Mark Krikorian of the Center for Immigration Studies. Spend a minute on that Mexican situation, Mark, and what you see it entailing in terms of driving people across the border or simply creating new forces at work on the southern side, bringing things into this country, whether it's drugs or people or perhaps terrorists and their weapons.
Well, the possibility of overflow is something people have been worried about for some time, and with good reason. Now, on the one hand, there hasn't been all that much overflow. There's been some, but I mean, El Paso, for instance, is one of the safest cities in the country. Now, there's military bases everywhere and all that, but in addition to that, the drug cartels, I think, have been very careful in trying to not have too much of the violence overflow, because then they're likely to provoke a reaction by us, and you know, our police aren't all corrupt and on the take, and so it could be a problem for them. But the success that the Mexican government has in beheading, figuratively anyway, the drug cartels, because they've arrested or killed a significant number of major kingpins. I mean, they're really trying hard. One of the corollaries, though, is that these drug cartels then become less governable, less sort of driven by prudence, to the extent that's a relevant term, and, you know, and rules. And so I think it's actually more likely as time goes on that some of these rogue elements in the cartels will, in fact, take their violence on our side of the border. And yeah, you're going to see, you know, a courthouse being blown up by a car bomb or judges being killed, sheriff's deputies' families being targeted, that kind of thing. And, you know, the point is we need to try to head that sort of thing off. This administration just doesn't seem to take that kind of threat all that seriously.
Yeah. And you have quite properly indicated that when bad things happen, they are goaded into taking steps that might have been unnecessary, or at least less necessary had they taken steps initially. Mark, on the Mexican side of the border, stay with that for 1 minute. Tell us what you understand is the state of play with respect to organizations like Hezbollah, and perhaps the Iranians operating there. We had an arrest a few weeks back of a prominent Hezbollah figure. What do we know about what Hezbollah is doing there with respect to conversions of individuals to Islam, to their Sharia program in particular, or otherwise organizing to use that as a sort of stepping off platform for attacks against our country?
Well, a lot of it is suggestive so far, not conclusive, but there are conclusive. I mean, there is some actual evidence. I mean, the what you referred to was this arrest of a Hezbollah official. Several years ago, another Hezbollah official had been smuggled through Mexico across the border. He's now in federal prison. He was a fundraiser, and his brother was the military head of Hezbollah in the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon. So, I mean, there's, you know, there's documented instances of Hezbollah using Mexico. And it seems that what they're doing is they're using as a kind of base or cover there Lebanese immigrant communities, because people don't realize that there are, in fact, Middle Eastern immigrants in small numbers and have been for a long time throughout much of Latin America. Now, it's not as much as, you know, in Dearborn, Michigan or what have you, but, there's a lot of them. And they started out mainly as Christian, but there were some Muslims in them, and over time, more Muslims moved there. So there is base in Tijuana, for instance, and elsewhere, of Lebanese immigrant communities that Hezbollah is using kind of as a cover and jumping-off point. And, you know, I mean, the Mexicans take this reasonably seriously, if only because if some kind of jihadist attack actually comes, you know, is committed to the United States that came by way of Mexico, our reaction is going to be disastrous to the Mexicans, because they need access to us across the border a whole lot more than we need access to them. And, you know, there's not a lot of Miranda rights and all of that in Mexico, as you can imagine. So in some sense, Mexico, you know, we've been able to successfully work with Mexico in doing stuff sometimes that we wouldn't be able to do here because of the ACLU. But that has to be counterbalanced by the fact that Mexico is unbelievably corrupt, and the state is really does not have all that much legitimacy in a lot of ways. And so, you know, determined jihadists can, in fact, make extensive use of Mexico as a way to get into the United States.
A very troubling picture, needless to say. Mark Krikorian of the Center for Immigration Studies. In the minute or so we have left, Mark, very quickly, talk to us about the vote of no confidence in some of our own border control or ICE officials who have apparently been promulgating the administration's policies in ways that the professionals underneath them find seriously deficient.
Yeah, this happened a little while ago. It was the union representing a lot of the immigration enforcement officials had a unanimous vote of no confidence in their management, in the politically appointed managers who oversee immigration enforcement, because they're making a lot of decisions that effectively gut large parts of immigration enforcement. For instance, ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has said that they won't take into custody illegal immigrants that local cops find as a result of traffic stops, except that all kinds of bad guys get stopped in traffic stops. I mean, at least two, I think maybe three of the hijackers, the 9/11 hijackers, before their attacks were stopped as a result of traffic stops.
And what might have been stopped had they been permanently stopped. Mark Krikorian, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for these insights and updates. I hope you'll be back to us soon with more of what we consider to be a really vitally important story, as you know so well, at the Center for Immigration Studies. Thanks for all your work, and do come back to us soon. Next up, we have our guest du jour, Sarah Carter, on the budget cuts coming to the Pentagon and what they mean for you.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Ever vigilant. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hello, friend. Pat Boone here with some good financial news for a change. Although stocks, bonds, and real estate may be stuck in a rut this year, the next mega stage of the long-term bull market in gold and silver is just beginning. Experts say gold will soon rush to new historic highs because gold alone is real money and offers value, safety, and growth. Gold is no longer a luxury. Today it's a necessity. Safety first. Start now by letting Swiss America educate and inspire you to rediscover gold for your existing IRA. Ask for their rare opportunity, DVD and CD. Stop worrying about financial gloom and do something to protect yourself.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513.
Swiss America knows gold.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513.
Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Hands can do incredible things. They made every sound in this piece of music. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. Visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your...
Hey, Charlie, what gives?
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Oh, unbelievable. What do they feed that guy?
Yeah, but they still lost.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when I was playing, what we tried to
you,
do with it...
You played on Biltmore Street.
Hey, come on. I play in the service.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is the kid, he should have...
Yeah, he should have fallen down. Hey, you okay? Stop joking around. Oh, no. Someone call 911!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, and many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk, but it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined, as ever at this hour, by Sarah Carter, the Washington Examiner's superb national security correspondent, and a woman we're very proud to have as a regular here at Secure Freedom Radio. Sarah, welcome back. It's nice to have you today.
Thank you so much, Frank. It's great to be back.
I know you're running between meetings, and we're catching you on a cell, so we're especially grateful for catching you for a few minutes. I wanted to talk about the sort of budget, but there's some other issues that I know are pressing, one of which is I'd love to get your sense from inside the Pentagon, where you do some of your best reporting, as to what the sort of sense you get from the troops that you're talking to might be as to the president's statement about Iraq, about where we're going with respect to Iraq, and more generally, his leadership at this particular moment in time.
You know, there's two sides to this, Frank. You know, when you talk to soldiers, it's easier to get a lot of information from them when they know they're not going to be the pinnacle of a story. So I could tell you on background, there's a lot of frustration. You know, they've had an enormous amount of challenges both in Iraq and Afghanistan. They can only hope that what has been done in Iraq will seem to solidify at least that Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and other insurgent groups won't rise again, and that sectarian violence will hold itself off. But as we've seen, you know, we've seen an enormous amount of violence in the region recently, and there's a little bit of concern that, you know, that because of this, that there may not be the type of stability in Iraq that they were hoping for. As far as Afghanistan is concerned, and particularly, you know, when you're talking about the President of the United States, you know, considering all that's happened in the past with McChrystal and everything, it's very difficult to get anyone to talk about the administration publicly. But there is an enormous sense of frustration with Afghanistan for our troops. They feel that they don't have the tools that they need, and even with the surge, they feel that, you know, the realities on the ground are playing out quite differently here in Washington, D.C. and in the Pentagon, that they're not really seeing what's really happening out there. There's a real big disconnect. And so I don't think that a lot of the troops feel that, for example, even with, we've talked about this in the past, with announcement of the drawdown date, how it's affected them. We've seen generals come out and, you know, speak out against what had happened about the president's speech in last December about the drawdown date. So there is an enormous sense of frustration. They feel that the Taliban's gained an enormous amount of momentum. Experts feel that the Taliban has gained an enormous amount of momentum that they didn't have in the past. So, you know, this is the next 6 to 8 months. How this plays out will definitely reflect on this administration and how our military feels about this administration, and particularly the future of Afghanistan.
Yeah. We're going to be getting some live reports from you. We look forward to this in the next few weeks, Sarah Carter, as you head over to embed with U.S. forces in Afghanistan. And we're so grateful to you for your willingness to keep us abreast of what you're finding out as close to the boots on the ground perspective as we can, because this is a vital aspect of the war effort. You know, the morale of our troops, what their assessment is of the value of their mission, how it's valued back here by the American people more generally. This is all really important grist for our mill. So thank you so much for joining us to do all of that. Sarah, I saw today that, as you may know, the U.S. government has now identified the Pakistani branch of the Taliban as a terrorist organization. As best I can tell, they have not yet identified the the Afghan part of the AFPAC Taliban as such. First of all, what do you think the implications might be of so designating the Pakistani branch, and why are they not designating the Afghan piece of it as well?
That's a great question. I think for a long time, many people, I have traveled into Pakistan. I understand Tariqi Taliban and, you know, and the LET and other groups there are considered terrorist organizations to those people who have been directly affected by it, both the Pakistanis, the Afghans, our troops. Why have they not designated the Afghan Taliban? That's a very good question, because there's a strong nexus between the Pakistan Taliban and the Afghan Taliban. And at this particular point in time, I think a lot of it has to do with President Karzai and also our own State Department, who somehow still believe that we're going to find a way to negotiate some kind of a peace deal or some kind of a truce with some of these Afghan Taliban leaders. You know, it's a really strange dichotomy, you know, that they're designating one Pakistan Taliban, which we know many of the Afghan Taliban leaders are hiding in Pakistan and work very closely with the Pakistani Taliban, and not designate the Afghan Taliban a terrorist organization, when clearly they are responsible for the deaths, the majority of deaths of civilians in Afghanistan, not just troop deaths with IEDs, you know, and other forms of fighting, but civilian deaths in Afghanistan. So this is going to be very interesting. I think this might be, Frank, the first step in maybe reaching that summary. And I think that they're going to just wait out and give a little bit of opportunity to see what Karzai plans on doing, particularly in the next few months, and hopefully in time, don't come to the realization, like a lot of experts have, that some of these Taliban factions in Afghanistan are truly evolving into terrorist organizations.
Yeah. Sir, we've got a less than perfect connection, and I hope everybody can hear you adequately. The points you're making are very important, especially this idea that out of a sort of realpolitik determination to pursue negotiations with the Afghan branch of this terrorist operation, we're not going to call it what it is. We're not going to take steps, the full panoply of steps that we could take, as we now see the administration doing vis-a-vis the Pakistani branch, against the Afghans, in the hopes that somehow we'll find some with whom to negotiate what I can only construe as the surrender of Afghanistan. I pray that's not what this is going to come to, but we'll again get
and
a better
sense.
And
so do our troops, Frank.
Yeah.
And so do our troops who have sacrificed their lives, their limbs, and their time from their family to fight a war that they believe was necessary after September 11th, and they don't want to see the resurgence of a Taliban, and they don't want to see a safe haven in Afghanistan ever again. And that I can tell you, I've sat with them, I've watched some of them cry, because it's a very frustrating situation for them when they feel that their leadership is not listening.
Yeah. Sir, we've only got about a minute left, but you've written a piece that was very, very powerful on this particular point, that American forces may well pay in blood for supporting this effort to have an Afghan election here in the next few, I guess it's weeks, isn't it? Give us your quick take on that, and then we'll have to let you go.
We're expecting, I've been out there many times, but according to the experts and intelligence folks that I've been talking to, they're expecting violence to escalate in the next few weeks, next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to see a lot of momentum on the part of the Taliban to try to disrupt these elections and to keep our troops from doing their job, and particularly to weaken and show the weakness, which we already know in the Afghan government. So this is going to be a very trying time for General Petraeus and for our troops on the ground. And it's going to be something that both this administration and everyone else, I believe, in NATO is going to be watching very closely. And particularly NATO. NATO has a lot, our European allies are feeling a lot of pressure. And if this election falls apart and if there's a lot of escalation and violence, we may see a lot more movement in Afghanistan. I mean, out.
Heading for the exits. Yeah. Sarah, speaking of the exits, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. Sarah Carter of the Washington Examiner, also our duty expert on so many of these issues here at Secure Freedom Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week. That's it for this installment of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll tune in again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, brought to you by SwissAmerica.com.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.